From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is being made at the Port of Rochester, which has been the site of a number of high wattage projects over the years, and now the city is looking at a significant new development project that could include an array of things, a hotel, condominiums, townhomes, all designed to spark new life and energy and potentially new business investment at the port. Supporters say it's about time that something exciting happened on this valuable waterfront. Critics are raising a number of concerns, including size, environmental impact, and more. Tomorrow night, a gentleman named Bill Brown will outline his own research about the cost and sustainability of developing the site. He'll be joined by a Geneseo professor. But first, we're talking about the city's plans this hour on Connections. And my guests include Kate Washington, City of Rochester Deputy Commissioner of Neighborhood and Business Development. Nice to have you back, Kate.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Also, here's Bill Brown. He is a systems analyst, the president of TMS Solutions, and he'll be presenting tomorrow night on these projects. Bill, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Ed Steinberg is here with Bill as well, and Ed representing, I would say, a citizen's perspective. Not all citizens, but Ed will speak for some, I think. Nice to have you, Ed.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Kate Washington, I want to start with you, and it's important to kind of just make sure we understand where we are in the development plans. There's been a lot of sort of debates and updates and conversations about timelines, what will be there and what won't. Where does the project stand at the Port of Rochester?
Well, actually, I'm glad you asked. The project is actually on schedule right now. We have a really, I think, really wonderful plan, and the plan is one that allows us to do exactly what you said earlier, and that is to develop, create investment opportunities, and create a thriving community that can be enjoyed year-round down in Charlotte. So we're looking forward to it. Right now, the developer, Greg Weykamp, has had his purchase of the entire land proposal already approved by City Council. He's currently in the process of raising funds for the project. We will have an LDA for the project all completed by the end of this month, and we're looking forward to moving forward with the project. We expect that the construction will begin starting early next year, 2016. And we think it's going to be a really exciting project, and I think it's going to be something that brings very vibrant activities and lots of involvement from not only the community but outside community and visitors and tourists as well.
Construction could start early 2016. Would take about how long?
Well, actually, phase one, it can take probably about a year to really complete phase one. So we're looking for, that's really what we're looking at, is developing the phase one project. And we're really excited about the fact that this is going to be a project that will bring not only recreation, but also residence and hotel opportunities within that parcel.
All right. Help us kind of get a visual for it then, Kate, because we talk about hotel, condominiums, retail, restaurant, but give me a sense for, you know, how big, what it would look like for our listeners who are somewhat familiar with the port and maybe spend some time down there.
Okay. So just to give you a little bit of the specs on it, it's going to be 76,650 square feet. It'll be 10 stories high. We'll have 18 condominium units in that. We'll also have 900 square feet of commercial space. And we're looking at having some parking, of course, to be able to accommodate all of that in the
surface level parking or underground?
Not underground, but it would be concealed by the building. So it'll be, conceptually, you could think of it as underground.
Kate Washington spends about half of her waking life dealing with parking issues in Rochester, as we've talked about in this program.
Yes.
But is this the kind of project that, you know, I know when these kind of projects begin to come together, there are various voices, and we're going to hear from Bill and Ed in a minute. But when you think about what City Council has to do before you approve it, what kind of vetting takes place?
Well, actually, this project had quite an extensive vetting process. In fact, because we wanted to make sure that we incorporated all of the voices of the community and all the interests of the community, we spent quite a bit of time before it actually went through to City Council. And City Council provided the approval based on I'd say a very, very aggressive timetable and the ability for the developer to raise the appropriate funds for the project and make sure that it happens within the timetable prescribed. So it was one that I think really required a lot of vetting, and there was a lot of discussion internally, externally with the community, with the various community groups. Charlotte Community Association has been actively involved in discussions with us around the project. So I think it has really had a lot of due diligence attached to it.
And given all of the history down at the Port of Rochester, mm-hmm. you could always decide not to do anything. Why right. decide to take on a project of this magnitude?
Well, here's the situation. We have, obviously, one of the greatest assets in our community is a waterfront. We have assets, we have waterfront assets through a river. We also have the lake. And we are one of the few communities, I would say, that have all of these wonderful assets that have not really paid a close attention to developing those assets and making them even more viable, a part of the community. So I think that this project is one that allows us to bring local recreation together with local residents, along with outside investments, along with the residential opportunities for people who like to live on the waterfront, and also to attract tourists and visitors from other places who would come to Rochester, maybe want to be in a beautiful waterfront community. So I think that this project is one that is really of a scale that can really have a very transformational effect, not only on the that part of our city and that region, but also on the entire city as a whole. So I think it's a great project.
All right, Bill Brown, I know you've got some concerns and you're going to raise some of those tomorrow night at a presentation. You've been hearing Kate describe what the city views as great benefits here. Where are we going wrong?
Well, in regards to great benefits, to any kind of a development in Shalott that would bring more people there, there's no question that that is a good thing. The problem is the site itself. There's been lots of research done by the city of Rochester, no question about that. There's some critical things that they missed in regards to the site. And no matter what your grand plans are, if you can't build a building properly or it's going to cost you so much money that it's no longer economically a wise decision, you have to have concerns about that.
All right, so where specifically could we see problems in the building? Again, Kate said the project's been vetted. You've got a developer who's going to be investing in this. You'd think they'd want to be very careful about choosing a site, building, making sure all the specs and all the measurements and all the numbers are accurate. What have they missed?
Well, they missed about a bit of history about 12,000 years ago, actually. And that is that the Lake Ontario was actually over 400 feet deeper at that point in time. And as a result of that, that area that looks very flat, very stable, all right, was actually a gorge, all right? And that gorge area eventually filled in when the lake recovered. But over a 5,000-year period, glaciers were able to cut a deeper and deeper gorge area into that section, all right? With that means that, yes, you can build anything, but it's more costly the farther down you have to go in regards to bedrock. And it becomes even worse if you don't know exactly where the bedrock is.
Is it something that, I know the bedrock question is sort of a, seems esoteric. It's an important one. Kate, have you heard the question before? Has the developer addressed it?
Well, yes, actually, one of the things that we found is that certainly, and again, I'm not an engineer, but we have had some conversation about this. Making sure that the building and the structures are anchored deep enough is something that happens in many waterfront development areas all over the country. And that's, we found that it's equally as viable to do it in our Shalott area as well. And I think realistically, we could look at, you know, geological occurrences that happened, you know, 21,000 years ago and say, well, you know, we had drumlins in central New York. We should never build anything there because of the glaciers. And so realistically, we have to be able to adjust for risk in any kind of construction project or any kind of development, really. And I think that we've done an adequate job of really adjusting for whatever risk factors existed there.
Okay. Bill?
Well, in regards to those risk factors, though, I doubt that you have a business plan in regards to what it's going to cost you to build those buildings yet, because you don't have enough information about where the bedrock is right now. And if you don't know what it's going to cost you, and I'll give you a great example of this, it could cost you a lot of money, and maybe the developer would not be able to provide the additional funds, which is the developer's responsibility per what Mark Greger says. You know, it's they need to make their decision on whether they build or not build once they understand the site. The O'Rourke Bridge, when it was built, okay, went way over budget. Here's why it went way over budget. The state of New York engineers, very qualified engineers, no question about that. They do bridges all the time, right? They did three boring tests at that site. They thought they knew what they were dealing with, all right? The reality is if they had done just one more boring test, they would have found out that there's a rather deep bedrock there And as a result of not knowing that, all right, they had to redesign their foundation completely. They took 4 years rather than 2 years to build the project, and they went over $100 million as opposed to the original bid price of $63. And it was simply about the boring test and the lack of. And we have the same scenario here. We don't have enough information. I did bring the list of boring tests with me in regards to that map sitting next to you, and there's been plenty of them. But they haven't been to bedrock. Most of them are in regards to how deep can we dig to make sure that we can dig that deep, not necessarily bedrock.
All right, Bill, but let me ask you then. If the concerns you have bear out,
sure,
and the costs run over and the time runs over, that's on the developer, isn't it?
Yes, but there are limits there.
Are you worried that the taxpayers are going to get stuck with something?
There's a good chance of that.
Okay.
I would certainly have to disagree with that. In fact, one of the strongest attributes of this project is that the developer is fully invested and is raising funds, and the city has been very supportive. And of course, as I mentioned before, City Council has done its due diligence as well. And we would not agree to a project that would put the city or taxpayers at risk.
Okay. I'm always hesitate to bring up these two words together because whenever you do, people immediately color every project with it. But when you think about the Port of Rochester and you think about Fast Ferry, you think taxpayers are sensitive to getting stuck with the bill. And Kate, my guess is that's not new to you. It's not new to the administration.
It's not. And it's interesting because I think that that's probably the comparison that people tend to draw immediately. And obviously, that was a situation that, you know, for a lot of people, it sort of hangs over in their minds. But I think that there were a lot of lessons learned from a process like that and a project like that. And I think if we think historically, we can think of a lot of blunders that government has made over time that hopefully we've learned from. And I think in this case, I think this is a very, very different scenario. And I think that they're completely unrelated, but I can certainly understand how people can try to draw that kind of a connection.
All right. Mm-hmm. Kate Washington saying the city understands the concern that taxpayers have, and taxpayers are not going to get stuck with overruns here. I want to get to your phone calls in a moment here, but let me bring in Ed Steinberg as well, who's in the studio with us. Mm-hmm. And from a citizen's perspective, Bill is going to be presenting tomorrow night and talking about concerns on the environmental side, the planning side. What are your concerns?
Well, Bill has focused on the site. I focus differently in this conversation. As a citizen, as a user of Charlotte and a lifelong user, I'm a native Rochesterian. I do not live in Charlotte, so I am a stakeholder from the broader community mm-hmm. standpoint, mm-hmm. and I would like to encourage that outlook to happen more frequently because it has been absent, I think, from the discussion. I think the deputy commissioner's words are right and in good measure in that the city has good vision for this development area. It has been diligent in trying to engage the community, but let me say this to those comments. I believe that the city has held meetings and engaged the public, but it has been largely the Charlotte community public. I would take the position that there are many more stakeholders than exist in the community of Charlotte. Many more people pay the costs of maintaining Charlotte than those who live there. Many more people use the beach and the park than who live in Charlotte. So there are many, many stakeholders outside of Charlotte that need to be engaged. And I think that our objective should be to make the Charlotte area a very unique and improved place. That's fine. Improvements and development are good things, but they need to be done right. And they need to benefit the public at large. And this is where I come from, largely.
Okay. So, Kate, any thoughts about making sure the entire city or the entire community is engaged mm-hmm. as opposed to just Charlotte, for example?
Well, I think it's interesting that you would characterize it as just being Charlotte because really all of the meetings that we have are public meetings, and they're held for the general public. Even the meeting, when I think in particular, even though the meetings, some of them obviously are being held in Charlotte, but they're all public meetings and anybody can attend. In fact, I think about the meeting that was held at Charlotte High School, which is a large auditorium. Anybody in the community is welcome to come. And of course, the other public forum that is always available to everybody is City Council. And we once a month have people come and speak to the council, and I can tell you I've been coming to city council meetings, and almost on a regular basis, I cannot think of one council meeting that I've attended that there have not been people who've had opinions that they spoke about Charlotte development. And so that forum is there, it's consistent, it's ongoing, and I would welcome, as you mentioned, anybody to come and to have the, and make their opinion known.
I agree with what you mm-hmm. said. But I will say that when you develop an area such as the Port of Rochester, it's tantamount to developing Main Street. It's an iconic and very valued, very historical place where people have gone. They go there for recreation. They go there for nature. They go there for renewal. They go there for many reasons. It's a very prized place, and it needs to get the attention of our community and our experts in the community. Instead, I think what has happened is that for whatever reason, perhaps because people are trusting the decisions of our elected officials to do the right thing, that they left it to those individuals to make the right decisions. And at the same time, I think that what is happening is that we are seeing a type of development that is very large scale. It is very unprecedented in very many ways, such as the size of the buildings, the changes of use that will now include high-rise residential buildings, the loss of some public uses such as the vistas at the water, the public parking and the accessibility. Charlotte has been a wonderfully open and accessible constant in our community where people can go. They can immediately get to where they want to be at the water or in the park or walk the pier or walk the boardwalk, whatever they want to do. But it's been beautifully accessible. And with the intended changes, starting with the first part of phase one, which is a 10-story hotel, to go next to the marina that is under construction, we will find that that accessibility will begin to be reduced, and it will be reduced much more when high-rise condominiums are built.
Kate, go ahead, and then I want to get to some phone calls, because okay. Just about every line's lit up. Go ahead, Kate.
Right. Well, first of all, I guess everybody could have a very different opinion of what they consider to be a high-rise. 10 stories is really what the development is asking for. And actually, to be honest, the developer actually reduced the number of stories, based on the input he got from people in the community. So I'm not really sure what you're talking about when you say other high-rise development, because we're really only developing phase one. So that's one of the things I would say. I think that the accessibility is not going to be diminished at all. And in fact, I think it's going to increase the accessibility because there will be more access to amenities that people will want to come enjoy. And I think that the concerns or the perception of some of the losses that people have anticipated, I think if they really spent some time really looking at the plans, and we've had a lot of information on the web, we've had lots and lots of media attention. I think if you really delve into the actual facts, I think you'll find that this is not going to be necessarily a negative development. It's going to be something that people will eventually embrace. Now, I also know change is hard, so people have a difficult time having a strong perception of what that could be like. So I do understand the concerns, but I just hope that people will spend some time and really look at the facts.
No, well, go ahead.
It is important for the listeners to understand that the first building, which is this 10-story hotel, announced in September of 2014 by the developer, will be the first of three buildings on parcel number one. There actually have been three development parcels that have been identified, all of which are to be developed, and which are part of a larger area that includes the Fast Ferry Terminal building, the marina, and some public roadway. And that is a 22-acre focus parcel that was looked at. Of those 22 acres, parcel one for development comprises 2.8 acres. And the marina, which will be publicly owned, apparently, constitutes about 4 acres of surface area of land. So in the very first phases of this development project, approximately 7 acres of land will be leased or sold. These are lands that the city has owned and been steward of for the better part of 100 years. And they have been valued for that time.
Kate, is that wrong?
I am. I'll be honest with you. I'm not really sure of the acreage, so I would not. I would have to defer probably to our engineering staff to probably give you more detailed information on that. What I will say is that this doesn't represent a development that is going to be a detractor. If anything, it's going to be an enhancement. And I think it's just, I really think it depends on your perspective on it. That land has been sitting there, has generated very little opportunity for development, for engagement, and for recreation, besides the fact that people do come there, and people will continue to come there, and then people will come to come there and enjoy the amenities now, and they will have something that it will be a destination location.
All right, let me jump in and say, I got to get to the phone since all five lines are filled up. I've got some comments coming in online. Kate Washington, who is the City of Rochester Deputy Commissioner of Neighborhood and Business Development, is being generous with her time this afternoon. She's only got about 18 minutes before she's got to get out the door, and I'm going to try to get as many comments in and questions for Kate as we can. Also, Bill Brown and Ed Steinberg are here. And Kate, real briefly, if people want to jump online, I know the City of Rochester has put some resources online on the city website for people to see. Where would you direct people to go?
I would say it's right at thecityofrochester.gov, and information is there, questions and answers, or there are facts and information for anybody to really go and delve into some of the issues that we've been talking about.
Visuals as well. Tomorrow night, Bill Brown is going to be presenting some of his concerns, joined by Richard Young, a geological sciences professor at the State University of New York at Geneseo. That presentation where tomorrow night, Bill?
It's at the Robach Community Center right down on Beach Avenue, right at the lake.
7 o'clock?
At 7 o'clock.
And free to the public. Let's get to the phones and those who have been waiting. It's John in Rochester to start. Go ahead, John.
Yes, Evan, thanks very much. First of all, I'm born and raised in Rochester and lived here all my life, and I've enjoyed Charlotte and that area. And I'm not extremely familiar with the plans, but I have to be honest, the idea of putting high-rise buildings of any kind down in there in that area between Lake Avenue and the river is absolutely ludicrous to me. If anything should be done to that area to develop it, it should be a very low-rise neighborhood-type feel, an arts and cultural district with stores and shops and small commercial offices. Nothing more than two or three stories high. Similar to what's happening here in Irondequoit at I Square, where they're trying to create that kind of small town neighborhood feel, where people can go and walk the sidewalks, tree-lined streets, where there is food and entertainment and that type of thing. To put any kind of high-rises down in there, it's just going to obliterate the views and the vistas and that whole area. Secondly, if you cannot tell me that if you put condominiums in there, first of all, the harbor that's being built is supposed to be public access slips, is it not?
Correct.
Is that right, Kate? Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And so if you put in high-rise condominiums and hotels there, then that entire area instantly becomes like a gated community. And those slips eventually will be bought up by people in the condos that want access, and that whole area will just become, it won't be what everyone is claiming it's going to be.
Are you saying it's going to be privatized essentially?
It's going to be privatized. And to me, if you want to put condos, high-rise condos, and I'm not opposed to that. I believe in having a residential presence there. The place to build those type of buildings is on the west side of Lake Avenue, along that strip there where there are many vacant lots and not much development there at all.
All right.
And have those buildings overlooking this cultural district and the river, and that's where you're going to get your million-dollar views and whatnot. So,
okay.
I mean, I'm highly opposed to this plan as it is now.
All right, John, just because I've got
I'll let you go.
Yeah, I certainly appreciate that, and I want to let Kate respond. Go ahead, Kate.
I would again suggest that you really go online and take a look at the plans and get a better sense of what it is. I think some of your questions would be answered if you had a few more details, and I certainly understand your concern about it. However, when I hear buzzwords like privatization and that kind of thing, again, I think it sort of plays into people's fears of uncertainty and not really having a clear sense of what the development is going to bring. And I think that, again, we have to look at it from the perspective of this is something that can be of real value, that can be an enhancement And again, looking at the detailed plans, looking at the actual layout and where it's going to be, it'd probably be more helpful to you.
The public will feel welcome in that area?
Oh, absolutely.
When things are thriving,
absolutely.
When they fill up, yes?
And we encourage that, as a matter of fact.
May I add?
Go ahead, Ed.
That the city has expressly said that it is looking for a transformational development in this project. And transformational has resulted in a new zoning code for this district, and the zoning code has been progressively written by the city to its credit. It is what they call a form-based zoning code and allows more uses than ever before. It was adopted in May of 2012, and in that change of zoning, it is now permitted to have high-rise residential buildings that were previously always prohibited. They were not permitted uses and that size and scale. The intention is now to be able to approve high-rise buildings under the new zoning code regulations administratively. There is no guaranteed right of public hearing to approving a transformational project, even such as this one, with a public hearing. No guaranteed right to a public hearing. That was well intended, to be less governmental interference and oversight and so on, but it doesn't work well in this particular case. It's not appropriate that a 12-story building, and that's the number of levels that are permitted by the zoning code, 12 stories. The hotel that's been approved so far is 10-story.
Plan for 10.
Under the zoning code, you can have 12 stories, and it should be understood that as a matter of right, again, no public hearing required, no public body required to approve it, 12 stories could be, that hotel could be turned into 12 stories as an administrative approval by the city. And therefore, even if it was a 4-story building, it should be understood that 12 stories would be permitted as of right, no public hearing.
Okay. I've got to get to more phone calls. Kate, are we fighting over 2 stories that won't happen?
I don't want to discuss. I mean, we've already had this conversation, really. And I think it's one of those things, as I mentioned, the developer actually adjusted his plans to accommodate the requirements.
And it will be 10 stories.
Exactly right.
Okay. Next phone call regarding parking, our favorite subject, is Don in Rochester. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I'm 2 things. Number one, I can't see what good it does to the average citizen of this area to have a large apartment building or condominiums for a few people. While doing this, we're destroying a beautiful park that is very, very unique. Now, I know it's why I say destroy it. We're changing the whole atmosphere of it. At the same time, we're losing parking. We're losing a lot. But is it for? For a few wealthy people who can afford condominiums with a beautiful view of our lake while blocking and destroying the view for the rest of us. The other one is we're losing a lot of parking spaces, which makes it now more difficult when we have events down at the park. What about that?
Go ahead, Kate.
Okay, so this was one of the discussions that took place when we had a public meeting, and there were concerns about parking then. We did reduce the number of parking spaces, but minimally, not enough to even make a huge difference. In fact, I will again encourage you to go and look. There's an entire document that gives you questions and answers. You just ask one of the questions that's addressed very well, I think, in that document. And we lose very few parking spaces in order to make this happen. It's so insignificant that I think people would be very surprised. The other thing in terms of public, there's going to be public space. We're planning on having an ice skating rink. We're going to really engage the space in a very, very different way so that we have people who can come and enjoy the space in the wintertime. And I know there are some people who enjoy it in the wintertime, but not everybody. So I think that this is actually going to be adding some amenities that were not previously available.
A comment from Tony online says, thank you to Rochester for bringing something this exciting to the port. I suspect that the naysayers are louder but are in the minority. That's from Tony. Kate, that makes me wonder. Actually, I know the city has tried, as you say, to reach out to the community, and you will never have consensus from the community on a project like this? Mm-hmm. Is it the city's belief that the majority of the community supports this project?
Well, we believe they do. I think that there are people who have a real strong voice and they oppose it. And I think we've been very, very open to hearing that and even addressing their concerns. And so there are some people who we may not ever really gain their support of it, but I think we've got actually had more people really have a strong agreement as to what a great benefit this project is going to be after they've heard the facts, after they've read the information, after they've seen what the possibilities can be, and also the excitement around having a very new space and a transformational project that really transforms that area. And I think that we've had a lot more people who have sort of really gained some understanding and gotten on board with the project and found it to be a great one.
Bill Brown, you wanted to weigh in?
Yes. First, we want to go quickly back to the parking issue. Based on their own study, the City of Rochester has posted online that they come up with over 700 spots short in regards to having any kind of an event there at the port. It's their own study. It's not something I made up. Secondly, they were suggesting that to handle that problem, they were going to have parking areas as far away as Ridge Road, which is almost 5 miles, maybe more than that, from the site itself, which makes it very hard for people to get to that site during an event like that. It just doesn't work.
Can I just give you an example? Let's just talk about the Lilac Festival. We just had it last week. There's no parking for the Lilac Festival. People come from all over to enjoy the Lilac Festival. And we have, and parking, of course, is always an issue. But people come, they enjoy it. It's not the major issue. We have shuttles. We've found lots of ways to really accommodate the need for getting transportation to and from an event like that. And I think that we can come up with ways to make that happen in the Charlotte area as well. So I'm not saying that it's not an issue, but I think that it's something that can be addressed. And I don't think it's something that would be a deterrent, actually.
Let me get Danielle on the phone. Go ahead, Danielle.
Hi. I live in Brighton, and I'm a great lover, both my husband and I, of the Charlotte area. As a result, we have attended the meetings in Charlotte. So even though we don't live there, all I can tell you is I feel that we are being given a false picture of what happened at that meeting. Number one, the gentleman who was the Green Party candidate for mayor, whose name I cannot remember, had a jar in front of the meeting. Everybody who walked into the meeting was given an opportunity to put a bead into one of two jars. I like the plan or I don't like the plan. I'm not sure of the exact words, but that was the idea. When I walked out, the I don't like the plan jar was high filled up. There was hardly anything in the other one. The vast majority of the people who were at that meeting were completely against the project. In addition, we were given cards to write down the questions that we had remained that were not answered, and it was clear people were really upset about it. I filled out about 3 cards. I never received any responses as I was told I would. And in addition, the whole atmosphere there was one of trying to give the community a sell job. No one responded, not only to the questions, everybody was upset about the height of the building still, but no one responded to the feeling that there was going to be gentrification. I know the gentleman used the word privatization before, but it was much more about gentrifying a neighborhood, which right now, when you go there, that's one of the beauties of being in Charlotte, is that every part of our multiracial community feels comfortable going there. And there were business people there who have their businesses in the neighborhood. They were not in favor of it. I spoke to the local council lady, I forget her name, what it was, and she said, oh, it's a great idea. Well, people that I know from that have gotten to know through the Facebook community that is so angry about this, felt that she never really took them seriously. So we feel, many of us, that we've been given a sell job, a PR job, and that's what this conversation on the telephone sounds like to me.
May I respond to Danielle?
Well, hold on. Let me let Kate Washington start, and then you can go ahead, Bill. Go ahead, Kate.
Okay, thank you, first of all, for your call. And you made a number of points. I'd like to address a few of them. One of them, I think, the first one that you mentioned was the issue of the cards. And yes, actually, I was one of those people who was handing out cards at the door. So I'm very familiar with that whole process. And the way we wanted that process to work, and this is how it did work, actually, was that we were collecting cards to get questions so that we could make sure that we were able to get all the information out there and have an orderly meeting within the time frame that we had. And the questions that did not get answered at that meeting were all posted on the website. So we took all of the cards, and I can tell you my staff spent many hours taking the information, putting in the questions and the answers, and posting them on the web. So those were on the web for a long time. So I'm sorry if you were misunderstanding that you were going to get a direct response to your question. Those questions were all posted, and they were all answered on the web. The other thing about the number of beads and everything, on those cards, one of the things that was interesting is that we asked everybody, where did you live? Do you live in Charlotte? Do you live outside? So we actually were able to track how many people who were Charlotte residents versus how many people were just city residents or other interested parties. And the whole question of the beads in and beads out, and I did see that. I would have to say a large majority of those people at that meeting were probably Charlotte residents because, again, I was one of the people who was taking the cards, and I read them. And so I understand that. And there was also a strong support for that meeting. We had a large number of people who were very, very much opposed to the project at that meeting, which is why we held the forum. We wanted to be able to address whatever the concerns or questions that people had at that meeting. So I think what you're saying is very accurate, and I think it doesn't necessarily negate what we're trying to say. What we're saying here is that
people's minds weren't changed. That's the whole point.
But you
wrote the answers on the web, which I'm glad to know about now.
Right.
But the reality is that the very same people who put those beads in, the people who live in Charlotte, and those of us who are supporting the people in Charlotte, mm-hmm. and those of us who care about that whole area, do not feel that the answers have been answered. We have been answered adequately. People are still just as against it mm-hmm. as they were before, and the city is in complete denial about it.
Some are. I would agree. There are some, as I said earlier, and I think I acknowledged that there are some people who are equally as opposed to the project as the first time they heard about it. But we also know, because we get messages and people have written on cards and sent us information via email through our website, that they are now fully on board with it. And you would not know that because, obviously, a lot of those people may not have felt comfortable standing up and saying that in a meeting.
Okay, let me just say this, because Kate Washington has got to get out of here, but I want to just ask you one more brief follow-up then, based on Danielle's point here. And if you're on the phone, we're going to continue the conversation after our short break. But Kate, have the plans changed in any significant way based on public concerns?
Absolutely. As I mentioned, one of the things that has happened, of course, is that the plans reduced the number of floors.
12 to 10 for
right,
the hotel.
12 to 10. We've made some... We haven't made significant changes as yet. However, we are continuing to engage in conversation. I have not seen any adjustment or changes in the plan so far. As I mentioned to you, Greg Wakamp, who does not live in the community right now, he does come and speak with us frequently. And in our last, most recent communication with him, he's actively engaged in making sure he's securing the financing that's required to make everything happen. And we are looking forward to seeing whatever adjustments he may make to the plans, and we haven't seen any as yet, but we will continue to keep everybody informed if that happens.
Kate Washington is the City of Rochester Deputy Commissioner of Neighborhood and Business Development. She has to leave the program now, and I understand that very well, but we're going to take a short break, come back with Bill Brown and Ed Steinberg, who are here in studio, talking about their concerns about the Port of Rochester project, and we're trying to answer as many of your questions as we can. We'll get back to the phones. Let's do that in about 60 seconds on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, 13 WHAM News broke the story that Henrietta Town Supervisor Jack Moore has used language that some find offensive in referring to African Americans. He says he's not a racist and he's taking sensitivity training. Our panel will look at what racism is, what is personal racism, and the difference between personal and systemic racism. Join the conversation Thursday on Connections.
Right to Die advocates are pressing California to legalize physician-assisted suicide, but one terminally ill Californian isn't lining up with them.
Death can be beautiful and peaceful, and it's a natural process that should be allowed to happen on its own.
Taking a stand against aid in dying legislation later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we're talking about the Port of Rochester development. For the remainder of the hour, I've got in studio Bill Brown, who is the president of TMS Solutions, and someone who's going to be presenting tomorrow night at 7 p.m. about his concerns and research into the Port of Rochester development plans that the city of Rochester is moving forward with. He'll be presenting with Richard Young, who is a geological sciences professor at the State University of New York at Geneseo. Bill, that presentation, 7 p.m. tomorrow night, where?
It's at Roger Robach Community Center, right on Beach Avenue, right at the lake.
Okay. And also in the studio with us is Ed Steinberg, who is a City of Rochester resident, also concerned about the Port of Rochester development. You'll find a lot of what these kind of conversations center on a Facebook group called Shalott Strong, and they've been raising some of these issues. Before I jump back to the phones, Bill, Ed, I know you want to weigh in on some of what you just heard, but go ahead, Bill.
Well, first of all, in regards to the online information, in regards to the cards that were collected at the Shalott High School meeting, I asked a very specific question about business plans. Is there a business plan? Where could we see such a business plan? That was not answered online. I've gone through all of the questions out there, and I could not find that at all. And I think that's critical. I think if any business tried to walk into a bank and said, oh, I need $70 million or $20 million, whatever the dollar amount, it doesn't really make any difference. They're going first thing they're going to ask of you is, oh, can we see your business plan? How are you going to do whatever you're saying you're going to do? And if that's not there, and I'm not sure the city has ever seen one from Mr. Wykamp, okay, I'd be really concerned. There's a lot of fluff and a lot of glossy information. That's fine, but it's got to come down to dollars and cents.
Especially when, well, I mean, I think that's a fair point when we have seen major projects in our community struggle or fail with taxpayer investment. But the city of Rochester has defended the developer, saying they have vetted the project, that they trust him. And my hope is we can bring him on this program on a future day to talk about what is the business plan.
Sure.
What do you make sure you do to make sure taxpayers aren't on the hook for more, as Bill and others are concerned about? Ed, go ahead.
It's worth mentioning the nature of the investors that the developer is seeking. The EB-5 Immigrant Investor Program is being heavily relied upon. I don't know how heavy. I'm not an expert on the program, on that investment program. But it is controversial. What happens is that investors are found in foreign countries, I understand typically China and India, and they are attracted by the fact that if they make a investment in a capital project such as this, they can be rewarded with expedited citizenship or visas, which makes them have other priorities as well as profit in this venture. When a developer tries to sell his plan to his investors, he generally obtains those investors by virtue of the fact that this will be a profitable undertaking, a profitable project. And in this case, the project is already profitable to these would-be investors because they will be rewarded with the opportunity to move to the United States in an expedited fashion. And therefore, the project, which is, in this case, three high-rise buildings on parcel number one hotel/condominium building, a building that will share both condominium rooms and hotel rooms, and two apartment buildings over some commercial spaces, which will be another intended attraction for Shalott. The profitability of those investments are perhaps less important than the opportunity to be able to enter the United States.
All right, I just have to say that is not an area that I'm well enough versed in, and I'm not saying it's not a legitimate question or concern, but it's one for us, I think, to revisit at a different time, because I want to make sure we stay focused on what some of what the callers want to talk about. Carlene in Rochester has been waiting. Go ahead, Carlene.
First of all, I totally agree with Ed. He knows his facts. That is the truth.
Okay.
And all of your other speakers who have spoken about core drillings, et cetera, they know what they're talking about. There have been no substantial core drillings on this project. The city does it backwards. They give approval after approval, then they go in and do core drillings, and they find out, oh, my God, we can't do it. Case in point is the marina, which the developer backed out, and they had to start all over again because they had made a mistake. Here's the problem there. It's very simple. People are looking at financial. They're looking at impact on the community. All you have to do is sit at your kitchen table and take out a stick of butter and two cereal boxes. And if you take out the two cereal boxes and you put them side by side next to the stick of butter, you will see the view that everyone gets from these wonderful buildings side by side. You can't see east or west. You ruin the view for everybody in the environment. You take away all of the parking. And in terms of the business plan for this company, it's zero. There is no business plan. And the city is being very Pollyanna, very hopeful. I'm not saying they're not being hopeful, but they're being very Pollyanna and disregarding the real concerns of people who know what engineering is. If you don't have bedrock for that building and it's down 30, 40 feet, not 14 feet, you have a huge problem. And for Miss Washington to say, oh, we don't know what that is, Salem Field, which cost them I don't know how many more millions because they found out they were building on a marsh, but they didn't look into the plan until after they had approved it. It's backwards.
All right. Well, Carlene, thanks for the phone call. Bill Brown is going to be talking about some of that tomorrow night. For our listeners who might have missed the first half of the program, Bill, just real briefly, the recap of your concern then. She touched on one.
She's really right on line in regards to what our concerns are. There are places, a lot of places in Rochester that are just not good places to build buildings. This happens to be one of them. It has a long history of problems in regards to supporting buildings down there in that whole parking lot area, plus most of the area moving forward and around the Abbott's stand down there was all marshland at one point in time. Very, very soft, and it does not support buildings. And it also can collapse on you when you least expect it. And we're going to talk an awful lot more about that tomorrow night. Dr. Young has a great presentation. You'll learn things about the lake and river area that you couldn't imagine.
That's tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at the Robach Center. Mikey on Twitter says, many of the opponents of this project don't seem well-versed with the plans. Hopefully more transit to this newly developed area will become part of the plan. Look at the history of the site. It was once an attraction before being torn apart for parking. That's what Mikey says.
I would answer to that by saying that the uses of these acres of land that will be transformed into marina, hotel, condominiums and commercial spaces could be considered for their potential uses. That is to say, are we choosing the highest and the best types of uses for this area that for which the city has been steward for 100 years, which are so near our public waterfront areas, so near, this is where the development parcel number one is. It's located diagonally across from the LDR char pit, and it extends between Lake Avenue and the river, and Corrigan Street to the north, and then roughly the railroad overpass to the south. There are two development parcels in that span. The parcel number one is the northern half, and parcel number two is the southern half. And I'd like to say before time runs out that parcel number two represents an alternative that we all should be asking about. It is city-owned land. It is still next to the marina that the developer sowed desires for his occupants, his tenants, and so on. And it is more close to another high-rise building, the only one in the immediate area, which is on the west side of Lake Avenue. Therefore, it has some context for a high-rise type of building. And parcel number one, which is very close to the lake, will have more impact on park users more impact on parking, accessibility, convenience, vistas, things of that sort.
So you're saying if you're going to develop anything, go with parcel two?
Well, parcel number is not a perfect answer. It happens to be dedicated parkland, and it is a little problematic, but it can be done, I'm quite sure, with a process of a legal process where the parcel number one becomes dedicated parkland. For some reason, parcel number one to the north is not parkland.
Bill, what do you think about that?
Well, in regards to making the area more visible or maintaining the view, that's a good idea, no question about it. But to correct the particular tweet, all of that neat Coney Island style stuff was not built on that particular site. It was built north of that, closer to the lake. And the reason why they probably did that is because the site was not appropriate to build on.
Alex in Rochester, you've got 30 seconds. Go ahead, Alex.
One of the things no one brings up is they keep saying that this is going to attract people down there. And I fail to see how condos in a hotel are going to bring people. Are Rochesterians going to drive down to Charlotte or take the bus down there to stare at this building? And no one has ever answered how this is an attraction.
Alex, thanks for the call. The city of Rochester and Kate Washington, I think, essentially said earlier, they think that the hotel and the condominiums are part of a multi-use kind of development, including, hopefully, increased business, retail, events, a skating rink, that kind of a thing, that they think that will spark new life and energy into the place so that, yes, some people who are staying or living there will use it, others will come down to use it. Obviously, Alex disagrees. Last word, Bill Brown, final thoughts on this project then?
Well, in regards to the project itself, I think it would be a great opportunity for people to learn more. We're all about educating people. We're all about providing the concerns that we have in regards to taxpayer dollars. If this project does not work, and you can't have one without the other. You can't have the basin without the buildings. And if you build the basin or the buildings, you won't build the buildings, I should say, if you don't have the basin. Both of them have geological issues.
Danielle, who called earlier this hour, says just doesn't feel like there was an answer from the city on whether the community is for or against. She says she did not address the reality that the local community is largely against this. And Danielle says the ferry failed. Why should this work? Kate Washington said earlier they know the ferry failed and they vetted this project. But again, the community raising some concerns this hour. We hope to continue this conversation. My thanks to Kate Washington and the city of Rochester for joining us for most of the hour. Bill Brown, you can see him tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Robach Center. cityofrochester.gov to learn more about what they view the future of the Port of Rochester project. Bill, Ed, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for all the calls today. Val, great work. I'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.